As I said before, our guest today is Michael Krueger from La Crosse. You're director of affiliation, which maybe you'll tell us what that specifically means and other things. Thank you for making the trip up from La Crosse. Good luck with your AV, and hopefully we'll have figured out the song at the conclusion. Again, Michael's presentation will end with a song that he's brought with that you have song sheets for, and then we'll have our final meditation and departure at that point. So thank you very much, Michael. The place is yours.
Volume-wise, are perfect. So this is kind of a three-year journey in the making. Lynn had invited me about 3 years ago to come, I believe, to speak on this very topic. And then that was still in the midst of COVID, kind of recovering, and we had to cancel. And then Lynn reached out to me again last year, and the topic she had proposed, I didn't feel quite as well-versed in. And so Rick Kite, who is a colleague who works across the street from me, I believe came and gave a wonderful presentation. He'll actually be speaking to a gathering I'll be hosting in a couple weeks. And then, so year three, invited back. So thank you for the welcome, Lynn. Thank you for the assistance with tech support, since that's always a challenge. What I'd like to begin with, so this is something that different organizations are now doing at the start of their gatherings. For the FSPA, and when I say FSPA, that's an acronym for the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, who is the community that I work for in La Crosse. And the sisters, over the last number of years, have been looking back in their own history, which has involved having a boarding school. There's a lot of conversation, Canada especially, here in the U.S., with religious congregations and boarding schools, and what does that mean? What does that look like? And importantly, what does that lead to going forward? So for the FSPA, one of the things that they have been very intentional with is opening up relationships with the tribal communities that were deeply impacted by the boarding school that they ran, I believe, up until the mid-1960s in Odana, Wisconsin, St. Mary's Boarding School. And so some of that work has been very difficult conversations internally among the FSPA. Some of it has been external work with the tribal communities. But one piece of that that I feel comfortable sharing because of the work that is ongoing is the land acknowledgement statement that many places now do. And so this statement that I'll be reading comes from the Nuns and Nones. So Nuns, N-U-N-S, and Nones, N-O-N-E-S. And it's a partnership, a collaboration between what would seem to be very different groups of individuals, those who live out a religious life and those who really don't have a connection or desire to have a connection to a religious background, but yet are still drawn towards land justice. And so this is one that I had adapted from a Nuns and Nones presentation that was given at St. Rose Convent about 2 years ago. And oftentimes, they're very different, they're very specific to the community. I adapted this one slightly to Winona, and also for the Unitarian congregation here, but they're all very different. They all often highlight the land on which we stand, but then also the ones I find most effective invite story as a part of that. And so, a land acknowledgement adapted from the Nuns and Nones Land Justice Team. We begin this morning by calling attention to our presence, that web of life, of relationships that connect us to one another. It is a web rooted in this place where we sit, next to each other, friends, family, seekers. We then call to mind the land herself, this earth that so generously holds us, all of the beings, human and more than human, that make up this web of life that we call home. The waters, the prairie, the bluffs, the plants, the insects, the birds, the mammals. And next, we call to mind all those who have loved the land. We bring today to our presence all the stories that are held by this land, by all those people who have loved the land, especially the first people of this land, the Dakota people. And then we call into this web of presence the Unitarian family, those who have been called together to explore a common humanity which affirms the dignity of every individual. We call into this web of relationships those seekers of truth, spiritual growth, and compassionate action. And then we invite the surrounding community, all those who make this place a place through relationship, those here in Winona that contribute to this web of belonging. And we also call into our presence those whose voices are missing from these conversations about the land, whose voices have been cut off, whose connection to healthy food and life and life ways have been threatened or lost. We call their presence into this room today. We widen the circle of love by centering their presence today. And holding and connecting us all, we feel for and we pray to the great mystery that holds all of it, the depths of time that we are situated in, connected in this moment by a past that we work to heal and a future we work to make beautiful. And held by that unknown future, by that great and loving mystery, connecting each of these layers, we begin our day. And so they often differ from one another, but often a commonality between land acknowledgement statements is the land itself that you're standing on, who was here originally, and who continues to be here, that it's not something designated to history, but that the indigenous communities are still very present, and then what is our role now living here in relationship with those communities. So the FSPA, the Franciscan Sisters, have been on an ongoing journey looking at that struggle, that tension, but also that opening to relationship. And it's a kind of an invitation before we have our gatherings to call to mind what is ours to do in that relationship. So thank you. So as was shared, I am the director of affiliation for the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, the FSPA. The FSPA is a Franciscan community, religious community in La Crosse, Wisconsin, so over the river. A lot of religious congregations have groups of individuals. They're often called associates, co-journers, in our case, affiliates. And essentially what that is a group of people who are drawn to the ministry, the charism, the works of justice that a particular congregation has. For affiliation, it is open to anyone. You don't have to be Catholic. It's quite ecumenical. One of our recent affiliates is Alice Holstein of La Crosse, who's a Unitarian. So it is open to anyone, ecumenical. And what I have very much appreciated in my role as director of affiliation for these last about 2.5 years is the ongoing relationships and learning from those who are from kind of one end of the spectrum, very traditional conservative Catholics, to those who identify more as Buddhist or aren't affiliated with the religious tradition, but both groups feeling called to a Franciscan identity. A Franciscan identity is, how I have discovered it, a deep connection to the environment, a connection to different movements of justice, prayer and contemplation, but an identity that is rooted in this world, but also sees that there is faith, there is spirituality that guides us. And so we're not confined to the walls of a church, but living out our mission within the world. And that's also kind of a separation between different religious communities. So the FSPA, they are a congregation of sisters, which essentially means that they are out in the community. The FSPA, they would look like any one of us, female, but they do not wear habits. They work in different ministries, professions around the country, whereas nuns are more so considered cloistered, behind walls, wearing habits, often engaged in contemplation, prayer. So a little bit of a difference between the two. And so the FSPA is the community that I participate in and get to work with. And across the US, we have about 250 affiliates from all different walks of life who kind of share in the charism of the FSPA, the ministries, and are invited to participate in some of the works of justice. Some of the main ones right now being looking at land justice, climate change, immigration. One of the sisters currently works at the border. Human trafficking was another large one that Midwest congregations were participating in. But often very focused on different justice issues. Where does the gospel call us in this world today? So that's just briefly about FSPA. For works, which will kind of shape the talk I'll give about acceptance and acceptance of others. I went to Viterbo University, which is in La Crosse also. It was at the time sponsored by the FSPA. And while there, I studied religious studies, ministry, and Spanish. And one of the primary impacts of that time was living and working at the Place of Grace, which is a Catholic worker community in La Crosse. For those of you who aren't familiar with Catholic worker communities, they began in the 1930s with Dorothy Day, and looking at how do we live out the gospel, not get so much caught up in the do's and don'ts, but how do we literally serve the poor? And so hospitality houses opened to serve those in communities. In La Crosse, the Place of Grace has been open since the mid-1990s and is a home that serves meals to the community and has a food bank. And so for 3 years, I was at the Dwelling Place in La Crosse. The Dwelling Place was a home for four amazing individuals with developmental disabilities, and it was loosely based on a L'Arche philosophy. And L'Arche was a movement that has many different houses around the world in the U.S. that is specifically focused on relationship and ritual between those who live and work with individuals with disabilities, in that we are both kind of on this journey together. We can both be taught something. Even though I may be caring for you, I can still learn from you. And it was very much rooted in ritual, in celebration, and in simplicity. And then I went from there to working at Edgewood College in Madison, coordinating service and volunteer opportunities for students. Edgewood College is in the Dominican tradition, and the Dominicans are the order of preachers who are very much outward facing, preaching the gospel, and living it out through justice. And then COVID hit. I ended up being a stay-at-home dad for about 3 years, and then we moved back to the area. Currently live in Viroqua, and I was a social worker for about 8-9 months before entering into this role. So a lot of what I'll bring to this conversation, the stories are rooted in some of those work experiences. To me, it has to do with the spider web. So Haley currently works for the UW-Madison as an EAP in the EAP office, which is the Employee Assistance Program. And during the pandemic, like many of us, she was working from home and would often go out for walks to clear her mind in between clients. And while out on one particular walk, she saw a spider web. And this web was very satisfying to her mind. It was almost the perfect web. The spiral, the spider was right in the middle, very intricate, but very, it just looked very well, like you'd picture a spider web. There were a few holes here and there, but largely it was a typical put together web when we think of imagining what does a spider web look like. She then continued down the path, and a few steps later, she came across another spider web. Now, this web was chaotic. There was really no rhyme or reason to it. The threads of the web went in all directions. There was dew on it. There was holes. The spider was off in a corner. It wasn't symmetrical at all, but still a spider web. It was functional, and it did what it needed to do. Haley's reflection on those two webs, the symmetrical, unified, perfect web, and the more chaotic, looked towards the idea of, in her line of work, stress. And sometimes having a lot going on can cause us to show up and spin this second web that is very chaotic. Or maybe we're interacting with someone on a particular day who they themselves are spinning that type of web. That day, or maybe even every day, navigate life is beautiful and functional in its own right. But to me, just the picture she had taken of these two webs, both functional, both serving their purpose, very different. But I think for many of us in this talk on acceptance, in working with others, many of us don't encounter the perfect web. We encounter the chaotic, the messy, the web that doesn't have rhyme or reason. And due to the struggles that each of us experience in our own lives, that is often the web we spin. And it's kind of up to us to encounter those webs within our own life and others with grace, with gratitude, with thanksgiving and generosity. So, four stories I'll share this morning that to me get back to this idea of spiritual growth as often being an internal journey, but unless we encounter others, the journey may be limited to our own reflection. So the first story, Francis and the leper. So for those of you who have any familiarity with St. Francis of Assisi, one of the iconic stories within his life, and he lived in the, I believe it was the 1100s, 1200s, that period of time, was his encounter with the leper. Assisi, they were kind of cordoned, pushed to the outside of the walls. They would often be made to wear bells so that if someone heard them approaching, they could literally cross to the other side of the street. It was a disease that had deformities, skin deformities. It was also contagious, and it was something that during that time was very much feared by those living within Assisi and elsewhere in Europe. The story goes that Francis had a number of conversions leading up to this point. He was the wealthy son of a merchant, and he went off to war, and war very much affected him. And when he came home, he was somewhat ruined in mind, body, and spirit, and unsure of what he wanted to do with his life. The story goes that he was out on his horse one day, and there was a leper on the side of the road. And as he was getting ready to pass the leper to not interact, something caused him to stop and approach the leper. And they say that he went over and embraced the leper and kissed the leper. And then when he turned around to give the leper a donation, he had disappeared. And it's a powerful, moving story in St. Francis's own understanding of what does it mean to be a brother or a sister to another? What does it mean to welcome the stranger or the guest? And from that moment, his life transitioned, it changed to serving the poor, to preaching the gospel, to really being an itinerant preacher, one who really lived out poverty. And from that one small action that then arose, Franciscan congregations, the Franciscan religious movement, affiliation, now hundreds and hundreds of years later, from those small actions. So Francis's embrace of the leper is a story that I carry with me in what I do for my work, and it's kind of a building block off of the next few stories that I'll share. The next story takes place at the Salvation Army Emergency Lodge in Milwaukee. I grew up around Milwaukee, Greendale, which is a suburb of Milwaukee. My mom was a nurse who worked at different homeless clinics in Milwaukee. And one of the sites she would go to was the Salvation Army Emergency Lodge, right in the city. A big concrete building, not very attractive, that served the homeless, oftentimes families who needed a place to stay. On this particular visit that I went to the emergency lodge, I was actually with a student group. I was helping out with a homelessness class being taught at Viterbo and was invited to come along for the trip due to my mom and the connection with the emergency lodge. And so it was a group of maybe 15, 20 Viterbo college students, myself, the professor. We drove the bus down, arrived at the emergency lodge, did a tour, met some of the guests, and then we're heading back out to the bus. As we were walking through the parking lot, there was a voice that called out off to the side, and the voice yelled out, "Krieger," which is my last name. I thought it might be one of the guests who I may have encountered having been there previously, and he shouted again, "Krieger." And I walk over, and there was a younger man sitting up against the concrete side of the building with his girlfriend. And as I approached, I began to realize that I knew this person. We had a shared story in a way. Matt, who was sitting there, was a classmate of mine in high school. We weren't in the same circles, but we knew each other. And now, 8, 9 years later, I was with a group of students taking a trip to the Salvation Army who were looking at, and for me, that really hit home in terms of the trajectory of our own lives and how oftentimes there's choices we make, but also circumstances that we live, and what separates me from Matt at that moment. Where did our stories intertwine? Where did they diverge? But now here we are together, him in relationship with his current story, me in relationship with my current story. For me, that has always stuck with me. Those random moments where you encounter someone, kind of a full circle, and you wonder where have they gone since? I don't know what's happened with Matt, but just that one brief interaction of me leading a group of students and then a fellow classmate of mine from high school living out the experience that we were sharing with the students. The next story also takes place in Milwaukee. Jesu Parish. Jesu Parish is a Catholic parish in Milwaukee, somewhat connected to Marquette University. And it was another site that I would sometimes go with my mom growing up when she'd work at one of the meal sites to do flu shots, TB tests. And within the Catholic Mass, there's a part during the Mass where there are intentions and then the offering of peace. And you turn to one another and offer peace through a smile, through a handshake, through a hug. Jesu Parish, being right in Milwaukee, often had, and because there was a meal site in its basement, would often have members of the homeless community sitting in the pews because it was a safe place to rest, a place where you could feel protected, you didn't have to watch your back. And in the pew, maybe two pews ahead of us, my mom and I, there was a man with a lot of black garbage bags that were bundled up. And during the kind of offering of peace, everyone turned to look up and offered peace to God. And I'd never seen that before. I'd always seen people interacting with each other, but never just simply offering peace to that great mystery, the God above us. And for me, that was moving, the relationship that this person in his circumstances was able to teach me something about my own identity and how I related to God. Last story, Place of Grace. So Place of Grace is a Catholic worker house I referenced earlier. I lived at the Place of Grace for 3 years. At that time, we'd serve about 120 people on a Thursday night at our community meal. Catholic worker houses, they're a little bit different from other meal sites that are hosted in churches or in different meal sites, in that they're often within a house, a physical house in a neighborhood that really doesn't look any differently from the other houses. The main difference in this house is we had three dining rooms, a smaller kitchen, but it worked, and then we had a food pantry in the garage. Early on when the house came to be, I was not a part of this experience, but it was shared with me. There was a lady named Jean, and Jean I did know from my time at the house. She had been going since it first opened. Jean was someone who lived really on the margins of the community. When I knew her, she was living in a small apartment run by that was operated by, I think, Gunderson Hospital. She often talked to the birds and the insects. My last experience of Jean was seeing her at Walmart, waiting for a taxi wearing an Elvis wig. A very dynamic person. She would often be invited to say the prayer before meals, but you'd have to cut her off after about 3 minutes when the prayer started going downhill and it was condemning. But she was someone who lived authentically and lived out her own self. Jean also, and this is key to the story, during that time period, would often dress in these suits that she'd pick up from Goodwill, St. Vinny's. And on her suit, she carried kind of a keychain full of keys. On this particular night that Jean was at the house, she was greeting people, and the Bishop of La Crosse decided to stop by. This was the early 90s. The bishop at that point, who I had never met, over time really rose through the ranks of the Catholic Church, becoming one of its highest members, Cardinal Burke, who is someone who has been somewhat divisive within, and so at the time he was Bishop of La Crosse. Bishop Burke stopped by the house, and he was dressed in his clerical outfit, the black coat, the black shirt, black pants, and the crucifix. And Jean was the greeter. The bishop walks in, Jean approaches to greet him, looks at him, welcomes him, and then pauses and simply says, after looking him up and down, "Look at this, we're the same." The bishop within his black kind of tailored suit, Jean within her ill-fitted Goodwill suit. But within those few words, did she see something that the bishop may have not recognized in that interaction? You have Jean, who was someone who was made fun of often if she was walking down the street by those who would see her, someone who had many health problems, who lived in relative isolation. Many people would come to the house because of desiring a sense of community. She had a sense of humor, talked to animals and birds, had mental health issues. I don't believe she had higher than a high school level of education, lived within her means with the small amount of money she brought in. And then you had the bishop, who really reached the uppermost part of the Catholic Church. At one point, he was the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, which is essentially the Supreme Court for the Catholic Church. So someone who, very educated, very articulate, well-spoken, has a following, has power, prestige, and then you have Jean, and the two interact. And then they go on with their meal. And Jean was able to say what I think many of us within religious and faith communities often forget, is that we are the same to our brother or sister. Once you can realize that, what does that lead to? So, kind of to wrap up the stories, I guess the three or four pieces of truth that I'll just share as I see it in terms of looking at our own reflections in acceptances. What can that person teach me? What can I learn from them? When I lived in Chicago, one of the jobs I had was working with and on that particular morning, I was the staff, so I went with him. If I would have chosen the route, we'd have left the apartment building, gone down the sidewalk, we're at Duncan. He chose to go the back way through the back alleys, past the dumpsters, behind the buildings, and he arrived at Duncan. That little interaction stayed with me, not because it was profound, but just that here was an individual who taught me a different path of getting somewhere than I would have taken. And so each one of us, regardless of where we come from, our experiences, our education, our profession, we can each learn something from someone else. Secondly, the recognition that each person is doing the best they can with the tool back to them, how I engage with them. And then lastly for me, and this is probably the biggest one, getting beyond the echo chamber of who do we surround ourselves with. Often that will be seen as people will often go to politics. We live in very polarized communities where we surround ourselves with those who are of similar political persuasions. But I think even more importantly is looking at the neighborhoods we live in and the economics of those we kind of engage with. Often for people who are college educated, your circle of friends are college, people who are college educated. And the neighborhoods that you live in are often defined by the wealth that you have. And so what does it take for us to branch out and meet those who are not only different politically, but also different economically from us? And that leads to, for myself and my experiences, growth. And that was particularly important when living at the Catholic Worker in a neighborhood that was more economically depressed and getting to live with those who, similar to everyone else, have their own politics, have their own beliefs and values and traditions, but came together in community over a shared meal. What I would like to close with before we'll see if the song works is kind of a poem, a prayer that I had written. This would have been a number of years ago when I was trying to wrap my head around politics and elections, particularly from a faith perspective, in that it seemed as though the gospel faith was being used as a defense for policies that really seemed not to align themselves with the gospel, and trying to wrap my head around it. So for me, one way that I go about reflecting is through writing. And if I can put something together, I can then often leave it behind and move on to something else. And so this was one that I had written mostly for myself to wrap my mind around some of the discrepancies I saw. For we know not what we do. The world that surrounds us is daunting. Too many voices speak truth, and prophetic words from false prophets sow division. God cannot be both compassionate and a defense through which morality props up the unjust. But the most persuasive voices can tailor the emperor's clothes to align with God's will, or is it man's? So that the immigrant is still detained, the prisons overflow, race is divisive, the poor are criminalized, the natural world degraded, walls are built, and weapons are beat not into plowshares, but into proclamations that they alone can make us secure. The drumbeat goes on. And then, in stillness, the God who is addressed in prayer, who is challenged and cursed and loved and condemned, responds. Enter into discomfort. Dispel rational thought that has normalized hate. And do not tread on the surface, but abandon it for the deep. For it is there that the truth will be uncovered, revealing that all are created in the image and likeness of God, all are made holy and sacred and just. It is a profound truth, if only because the voice that responds is feminine and courageous, as though all of the daughters and sisters and mothers had preached a holy gospel that for too long had gone unheard, in the echo chambers of the ordained and the backroom channels of the elected and the boardroom coffers of an ever-present greed. And the people would plead and the faithful would gather. We must rise from dust and ashes to a sermon on the mount that was once proclaimed, not mere allegory or callous refrain, but a prophetic truth that has always been. That has always been until it wasn't, because we had strayed so far from the road that the Judean was left to rot and decay, and Lazarus awoke only to die again. And the fishermen did not walk on water, but capsized in the storm, their bodies washed to shore, not as fishermen, not as disciples, but as refugee children drowned. And the rich man walked through the eye of the needle, and the mob picked up the pile of stones, and the loaves and fishes were hoarded away, and the other cheek was not turned to the side, but instead a gun was drawn, and the bullets pierced those hands forsaken me. And in reply, her voice dispelled any rumor or denial. My child, it is you who have forsaken me. For in that moment, our truth had finally been revealed. For we cannot claim a compassionate God if the God we choose is a placeholder to uphold unjust views, or whose ears fall deaf to the cries of the poor, or who promotes a prosperity that benefits a few and no more. For we cannot claim a compassionate God and proclaim the gospel as the only truth when that very same God is rejected by us, because he or she does not look like us. But rather, the image that appears reflected in our mirror is the immigrant detained by us, the refugee excluded by us, the inmate who profits us, the detainee tortured by us, the gay man shamed by us, the child abused by us, the woman silenced by us, the poor forgotten by us. And all of it in my name. So forgive us. We know not what we do. Forgive us, even though we know that it's not quite true, for we know exactly what we do. Amen. So for me, it was trying to piece together just this idea of there are many different realities that we live, many people we encounter. And if we can't encounter them with an acceptance of who we are, we ourselves become isolated. And so the challenge, I think, especially for faith communities, is not to become so caught up in the doctrine, the rituals, that sense of security that you know right from wrong, that you are blinded to the gray that most of us live in, and your allness, its essence, is something of beauty. And when you take away that and you take away the joy, it's something that does feel safe, but it also blocks you from interacting with others. And so that is my encouragement, to kind of stretch yourselves to be engaged with others, to be engaged among both similar faith communities and faith communities of other traditions. And I think the last piece is often, I think this was Malcolm X, kind of one of the most segregated times that we often find ourselves in, is when we gather as faith communities. And I think of the Catholic Church, where they often have missions in other countries, and you go to other countries and you interact with these parishes, but you probably aren't a better understanding with those parishes than the Baptist Church down the road, or the Pentecostal, or the Unitarian, where there's the divisions and the walls. So walking past those walls and divisions to engage. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm hoping you're going to be able to stay for a coffee conversation. I think there'll be follow-up questions. Were you able to work out this? You have a music thing that you like. Where a moment's over.
You have the lyrics. I'm not one who is a great singer, but this is. So in the Franciscan tradition, there's something called the Franciscan Peace Prayer, and this is a song based off. Thank you.
Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Grant that I can see through my human pain and still feel loved. Melt our hatred, let love take root in our hearts. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Through my own pain and need, let me learn to understand. Reach through our sadness.